starting with the question of the day on Thursday, June 4th. Rest of season, Eduardo Rodriguez or Lance McCullers?
I have an answer.
Go for it.
Eduardo Rodriguez.
All right, I'm going Lance McCullers. I was hoping you would go Rodriguez so we wouldn't land on the same side.
Me too.
Your wish is granted.
They're both owned in about the same amount of leagues, and they both were great. We welcome you to the show. Fantasy Baseball Today on Thursday. Adam Azer, Al Melchior, Chris Towers. You already know that. Follow us on Twitter at Al Melk, CBS, M-E-L-C, at C Towers, CBS.
At C Towers, CBS.
There you go. And at Adam Azer, A-I-Z-E-R. No CBS on the end of that. You can also follow Scott White at CBS Scott White. Okay, these rookie pitchers dazzled us yesterday. Joey Gallo hit another home run. We got some bullpen stuff to update you on. A lot of bullpen stuff. Kenley Jansen. We'll talk Craig Kimbrell. We'll talk Greg Holland. So some of the elite guys. Also Arizona's bullpen. Mark Trumbo got traded. And plenty, plenty more. Masahiro Tanaka was terrific. DFS a little bit later. Make sure you watch Daily Fantasy Live, 6 p.m. Eastern. I'm done promoting stuff. Let's talk about these two guys. Rodriguez. 7 innings. 1 run. 7 strikeouts, only 2 hits against the Twins. His previous start, his first career start, 7 2/3, no runs, 7 strikeouts, only 3 hits at Texas. And Al likes him better than Lance McCullers, who struck out 11 in 9 innings of 1-run ball against Baltimore last night.
I suppose you want an explanation for that.
Nah, let's leave it at that. Let's move on.
Explain yourself.
Yeah. Both of you guys, explain yourself.
Alright, well, first of all, I don't mind this choice at all. You know, whichever one you want to stick me with, Rodriguez or McCullers, I'm good with it. But I'd had a little bit of doubt about McCullers going into the start, actually, because while in the minors he did have some improved control, he wasn't throwing a lot of strikes over his first 3 starts and not getting the swings and misses either. And so that strikeout to walk ratio I thought was a little bit deceiving, and I thought against the Orioles that he might regress instead of having the best start of his career so far.
Okay. Yeah. Chris, your rebuttal?
He has a very limited track record in the minors, 29 innings above Class A. But the raw ability's there. We've already seen that. And I'm starting to realize with young pitchers especially that the pitchability is really important. But there are a lot of young guys with limited experience that can hack it in the majors. And so I'm starting to become a little less concerned about that when the raw stuff is as good as it is with McCullers. I've been really impressed by what he's done so far, even while acknowledging that he hasn't been able to get deep in starts yet.
But how could you not be impressed with what we've seen from Eduardo Rodriguez, who, you have to add him.
Whoa, hate Rodriguez.
Well, no, you're right. I'm sorry. I put words in your mouth. But I'm surprised that you would take. I was surprised you would take McCullers over Rodriguez, given how great he's been his first 2 starts.
I mean, McCullers has been right there.
No,
through his 4 starts.
You know? No,
a little up and down, but he was also better yesterday than we've seen Rodriguez be in either of his 2 starts as well. And it's not like the Twins are exactly a murderer's row lineup that they're throwing out there, especially against left-handed batters or left-handed pitchers.
Well, they're pretty hot though. They're playing well.
I'm sure they're playing well, but they're not good. There's a difference between those 2 things, and especially when it comes to left-handed pitchers. So, and I'm not trying to downgrade what Eduardo Rodriguez has done, especially since joining the Red Sox organization. He's been completely lights out since joining the Red Sox last summer.
I just want to make sure I heard, because I might have misheard you. So you were saying the Twins are good or not good against lefties?
Not good against lefties.
Because I think they're very good.
Yeah,
against
they are good against lefties.
Right.
Yeah,
they're not good against righties.
All right, maybe I had my stats wrong then.
So
which is
we got to give Eduardo a little
more credit then.
First of all, when have you had a stat wrong? This is breaking news.
Look, it's early, man.
Yeah, Chris. Chris yawned yesterday on the podcast. We might get a few more of those today.
I'm going to go on record and say I will not yawn today.
Okay. So I just want to point out.
We're going to call you Yawn Gomes.
Oh, nice. One thing about Lance McCullers. This is what Erasmo Ramirez just did at Baltimore in Ramirez's last start. 7 innings, 3 hits, no runs, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts. Baltimore's just kind of hitting like garbage right now. So my follow-up question is, McCullers and Rodriguez, they're both 77, 71% owned. Well, McCullers 71, Rodriguez 77. Are these guys must-owns in even a 10-team league?
Yeah, I would say so. Not necessarily that they're going to be among, you know, the best pitchers in that format, but, you know, kind of what Chris was saying, that just for the potential upside, I would prefer them to whoever the fringy guy is on
the CJ Wilsons of the world. Yeah, at least there's some room for them to outperform expectations, you know?
McCullers is at the White Sox and home against Seattle next week. And Rodriguez is, looks like a one-star pitcher against at Baltimore.
So. I have to wonder, now I'm going to be updating our probables tool later today in preparation for the pitching column that I do each week. And I have to wonder if Rodriguez's status hinges on what the Red Sox do with the rotation if they go five or six man.
Yeah.
So that's something to watch.
Next subject. Shove me in the Gallo water before I get too deep. Already the Rangers are talking about, hey, we could move Joey Gallo to the outfield. You know, make room for him when Beltre returns. He did strike out three times yesterday. It wasn't fair. He's facing Chris Sale. But Joey Gallo also homered last night. So, Al, you didn't get a chance to chime in on Gallo since his major league debut, and since you had said you hadn't really been pursuing him.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think right now about Gallo?
I cannot focus on that question because that song is like, it's on my fingertips. And I just can't recall what the song is.
You know, shove me. I can't sing today.
I mean, I know how it goes. I just can't remember what song that is.
I don't even know who sings it, but I know on Girls they did Edie Brickle and the New Bohemians.
Yes.
What I Am.
Yes. Thank you.
On All Girls,
right, now they I can did talk about Joe Gallo.
You should check out the parody of it. Well, not the remake of it on Girls. It's actually quite funny. A show that I don't really like, I swear, but very funny. Go ahead, Al.
Edie Brickell, she had a thing with Paul Simon once, didn't she? Anyway, I'm going way off topic.
I can call you Al.
Joey Gallo. Yeah, I still think that this could be, you know, this year's version of Javier Baez. I need to see more than two games. I need to see more than a series from him. The strikeout rate just terrifies me.
And Javier Baez got off to a great start last year, didn't he? Hit for a lot of power.
He did. That is the analogy I'm making.
Right.
Okay. Can we call three strikeouts and a home run a Gallo from now on?
I like that.
Email of the day is from Kyle. Any concern over the fact that Mookie Betts hit seventh in the second game of yesterday's doubleheader?
Enough that I wasn't considering him for daily because of that. For weekly lineups, I don't pay as much attention to that as you do. I guess I'll put as much stock in it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll say no. Plus, I think that he's due for a turnaround at some point, and when the stats get better, the position in the batting order should get better.
And I don't make much of it. Doubleheaders are weird, and expect him. He was actually hitting better in the two hole. The average was coming up a little bit, and I think Brock Holt batted second yesterday. So I just it's not like they have an obvious replacement right now to move Betts down in the order and bat someone else second in the order. They're tinkering with things, so. But I do think it's important, and I will tell you why right now. Because this is the hot streak that I was completely unaware of. Did you know that Adam Eaton, 35% owned Adam Eaton, .234 hitting Adam Eaton, two steals in four attempts Adam Eaton.
Are you talking about the pitcher, Adam Eaton?
No. He is over the last 28 days, the number 15 outfielder in points leagues and number 22 in rotisserie leagues.
Looking at his numbers, that doesn't even make sense.
Do you want to know why, Chris Towers?
The 21 runs scored.
And do you want to know why he has 21 runs scored, Chris Towers?
Why is that?
I believe he has the most at-bats of any outfielder over those 28 days. If not the most, very close to it. And why, Chris Towers? Because he bats leadoff.
Yeah.
So it is important. And I think, quite frankly, if Mookie Betts had been batting seventh all year, he'd be pretty lousy. He'd be a total bust right now. But anywho, I was shocked to see this about Adam Eaton. And yeah, you're right, Chris. Those numbers over the last 28 days, .264, three homers, one steal, I think, five doubles, two triples, nothing great.
Yeah.
What do you guys make of that? 35% owned.
Yeah, I've actually been, I have been considering him in daily lately, and I just can't bring myself to do it.
Oh, he's in my FanDuel lineup tonight, but it's kind of a tough night. I needed a bargain.
Yeah, well, and that to me is probably the largest part of Eaton's appeal. I don't know. I can't get excited.
Okay. All right. Hot streak I was completely aware of. That was the one I was completely unaware of. But here's the one I was aware of. Chris Carter. Chris Carter is 64% owned. Is it time to pick up Chris Carter? Over his last 11 games, he's batting .389 with 3 home runs, including 2 last night.
This was going to happen at some point. It's not like we're unaware of what his skill set is. And it's a very all-or-nothing approach to the game. But at some point, he was going to get hot and run into some home runs. And that's why, you know, I wrote a blog post in late April when somebody dropped him in my Roto League about how it was too obvious to pick him up, that I had to do it because at some point he was going to start producing power. And actually, it's not just over his last 11 games. He went the first 13 games without a home run. In 39 games since, he has 10 home runs, hitting .244 with an .852 OPS. That's pretty much exactly what we expected from Chris Carter.
Well, it's quite frankly, it's probably better in terms of the batting average, .244.
A little better. It's a .306 BABIP. You know, 10 home runs in 39 games will inflate that. But, you know, that's a 40 home run pace for a full season. That's right in line with what we came into the season expecting from Chris Carter.
64% own. Not saying you have to keep him all season, but he gets hotter than any player in baseball, basically, when he goes on his hot streaks. Let's remind people what Chris Carter did last year, beginning on July 4th, the Patriot that he is. July 4th, that's 72 games. He hit 24 home runs. Batted .268 with 24 home runs in 72 games. Unbelievable.
He was celebrating my birthday.
Your birthday is July 4th.
Yes, it is. I expect lots of presents.
Which famous baseball figure do you share a birthday with?
Uncle Sam.
I was going to say Uncle Sam Fold.
I'm about 95% sure on this one. George Steinbrenner.
Oh, okay.
4th of there July.
The boss.
I may have overstated Mookie Betts. The batting average is up as a number two hitter from 238 leading off to .255. But he hadn't done much else. He's slugging .319 with that .255 batting average. .314 on base! Congratulations, Mookie Betts.
You think Steinbrenner gets a calzone on his birthday?
Not anymore.
Past tense.
you know, that the impression of George Steinbrenner for being like, it's such a bad impression, but it's so funny. How do you even describe that? Because that's what we're talking about, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So funny. And even George Steinbrenner liked it. Let's talk FanDuel. Get on
Sorry.
We got a Chris Towers, party animal.
I got a tweet alert from an NBA writer. You know, I have to keep an eye on things out there.
So listen, FanDuel could be a little bit tough tonight. I advise you to start Matt Harvey. Then after that, it's a little bit challenging. There are 7 night games. We'll tell you more about it later, and you can watch Daily Fantasy Live at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. But if you're unfamiliar with FanDuel, go to FanDuel.com. There is an offer code for you to use. If you click the microphone in the upper right corner, use our code CBSPOD. And for every dollar you deposit, FanDuel is going to match it with up to $200 that gets earned as you play. If you use that offer code CBSPOD. And look, the three of us, Scott, Heath, Ryan Bass, who hosts the night show, we love FanDuel. We play every day. We talk about it every day. Before we get on the air, we're going to talk about it today. When we get off the air, you will get hooked, so give it a shot. No season-long commitment, no 2-day commitment. It's just one day, and you can play as often as you want. You can enter multiple tournaments a day. You can play head-to-heads. You can play 50-50s. Go ahead and learn about it. FanDuel.com. Use our promo code CBSPOD.
You can play against us.
Yeah, you can play against us. That's true. Now, Mark Trumbo and Vidal Nuno to Seattle. For catcher Wellington Castillo, relief pitcher Dominic Leon, and minor leaguers Gabby Guerrero and Jack Reinheimer. Trumbo is just outside the top 35 at outfield, not having a great year. .259 with 9 home runs and 23 RBI. What does this move from Arizona to Seattle do for Mark Trumbo?
I think possibly nothing.
Yeah.
In either direction. And I went back to look at his splits from when he was with the Angels. Now, he's going to a better park than he was in when he was playing at Angel Stadium for his home games. But his splits were, you know, at home were pretty good.
Bad at Safeco, but it's only 36 games, so
yeah,
not sure there's much to take away from that.
I agree.
This is a downgrade in home park, though.
From this year, yeah.
From Chase Field, where he spent the last two seasons, to Safeco, but it's probably only a slight downgrade, especially with the move to what should be a better lineup. I don't know if it actually will be with the way they've played this season, but it should be a better lineup.
His value is unchanged, I guess, in your minds.
Yeah.
But what is his value? What is Mark Trumbo's value?
Top 50 outfielder?
Yeah, that sounds right to me.
Top 50?
Yeah.
Yeah, man, that stinks.
Yeah, it means you need to be starting him in Roto.
Yeah, that's just a shame. He was a much higher-end player than that. When, you know, he's hitting 30 home runs a year and driving in close to 100 runs three straight years for the Angels. Last year it was an injured mess. You don't think there's a chance he regains that form?
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly not saying top 50 is his upside, but I think that's, you know, probably about where he lands is somewhere in the 40, 45 range, I would say.
Any other fantasy impact with this Trumbo trade?
With what an absolute dumpster fire the Arizona catcher situation has been, Wellington Castillo might actually become fantasy relevant again. He hit 13 home runs last season, hit 274 the year before. So there's a little bit of kind of deeper two-catcher league appeal there. Where do we think Mark Trumbo plays in Seattle?
Yeah, you're right. That's an impactful thing potentially.
Outfield.
It could hurt Logan Morrison. It could hurt Dustin Ackley.
And Logan Morrison, I looked it up last night. He had no extra base hits through the first 19 games of the season. But since then, he's got 5 home runs. He's got like an 870 OPS, I think. He's been very good for most of the season, whereas Dustin Ackley's just kind of been a disaster all year.
Yeah.
And I think they want to play Nelson Cruz at DH more. But also, since this is the single most important thing in fantasy, it does look like Logan Morrison, for the time being, is leading off against right-handed pitchers. So keep that in mind. Brian McCann left yesterday's game with a sore foot.
I'm sorry, but just one other quick thing there.
Uh-huh.
I have to wonder if the addition of Nuno maybe spells the end of Mike Montgomery's stay in the rotation, which to me would be disappointing.
They said bullpen for now.
Okay.
So
also, we didn't mention that it kind of clears up a glut in the Arizona outfield third base situation.
Oh, yes, yes.
Until Jake Lamb returns from the DL, which is supposed to come pretty soon, and then we're right back where we were for the last month.
Yeah, except I don't think there's any chance that A.J. Pollock's going anywhere. He better. I mean, maybe like an occasional day of rest, but he's clearly the cream of the crop.
Tomas, Peralta, Pollock, and Enciarte splitting time in the outfield. They don't seem to want... Enciarte has been the worst of the four, but he's got the most playing time out of them. So it's still a frustrating mess out there in Arizona.
Brian McCann left with a sore foot, and hopefully it's not serious. I believe he's going to have an MRI today.
Yep.
Shin-Soo Choo's playing through a pinky sprain. He could have had a pin inserted, and in that case, he would have missed a month. But keep that in mind, Shin-Soo Choo playing hurt. He had a good game yesterday. I think he walked twice. They were facing an absolutely lights-out Chris Sale. Josh Hamilton, 3 to 4 weeks with a hamstring strain. That didn't take long. And that stinks. I mean, I feel bad for him. It's easy to joke about it, but stinks for Hamilton. But it's good news for Delino DeShields. Leonis Martin figures to be back in the lineup now. Ryan Braun. So let's talk about this one. Ryan Braun had cryotherapy on his thumb. He had this during the off season. They freeze the heck out of your thumb, and then they dip it in hot wax so you can make a wax hand. You remember those?
At like the Renaissance Fair? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, but he did have cryotherapy on his thumb. He might miss a few games. I saw he might come back Sunday.
Yeah.
But he was saying, or somebody in the Brewers was saying that it was kind of wearing off. The effects of the cryotherapy, which is obviously pretty good, were wearing off. So he's just getting it again. I guess it's almost like getting another cortisone shot or something like that. But what do you think of this situation?
It worries me a little bit.
Yeah, it has to.
I mean, if I'm a Braun owner, I'm not making any changes right now. I'm not benching him when he comes back. But, you know, if he struggles, I think I'm going to be less patient.
Jorge Soler's on the DL with the ankle sprain. The Cubs don't expect him to miss more than 2 to 3 weeks. Yesterday, Scott talked about the possibility of Javier Baez coming up, playing a little third base, Chris Bryant going to the outfield. It's a possibility, but right now it looks like Junior Lake will get more playing time and anger more people with his...
He's going to get the fun police called on him.
...home run trot and his ridiculous bat flip.
Did you see Jose Fernandez?
Yes.
Leading the charge? It looked like he wanted to kill him.
Yes, it sure did.
It's so, like, Jose, don't throw any punches.
Priorities,
need you to
Jose.
Throw baseballs.
Junior Lake hits a home run off Dan Haren. He watches it. He flips his bat like kind of a jerk. And
also,
then he felt bad about it.
But I need to point out, Dan Haren shushed me on Twitter last night.
What do you mean?
What? did he have other things to do last night?
I said after the game that... Junior Lake shushing the Marlins bench was annoying, but I don't like seeing them play fun police. And he responded with shh.
No way.
Yeah, he shushed me. Shushed.
That's a great shush. That's
that would have been
ever on Twitter.
Tweet of the day if you had told me about that earlier. That is awesome.
And that's from the man who has the tweet of the century.
Who, Dan Haren?
Dan Haren, yeah. The night that he got traded to the Marlins and he said, I'm taking my talents to bed now.
I don't get it.
It's the, you know, LeBron.
I'm taking my talents to South Beach, but what is bed?
Right. Well, it was like a long day, and there was all this, you know, questioning of, are you going to play? Are you going to retire? Blah, blah, blah. And then at the end of all of it, he said, okay, I'm taking my talents to bed now. I thought it was hysterical.
That is
great
pretty
Twitter
good.
Handle, too.
Yep.
Which is
I
what?
Throw 88.
What is it?
At I throw 88.
That is good. Marlon Byrd on the DL with a fractured wrist, because that's what happens when you fracture your wrist. Salvador Perez sat yesterday. He does not have a concussion. He could be back soon. Edwin Encarnacion, he could DH today. Yasiel Puig could be back next week. Matt Wieters could be back tomorrow. Rest of season, Matt Wieters will be what?
Healthy, hopefully.
and a top 10 catcher.
I have Matt Wieters in a league, and I have Yasmani Grandal. And with Wieters coming off the DL, it's a one-catcher league. I sent a note to the league, and I said, if anybody's interested in Matt Wieters, let me know. And I got like three responses. One guy was interested, you know, we were talking about maybe a Mike Fiers, Matt Wieters trade. But other people were like, he's terrible, he's garbage, why would I want Matt Wieters? And I'm like,
3 straight years of 20 plus home runs, terrible.
What are you talking about? Like, even when he was just kind of a disappointing player for the prospect he was still a consistent top 7, top 8 catcher in fantasy.
That's what happens. If you have a lot of hype around you and you're not immediately the best player in baseball, you are terrible.
But then last year, he got off to this great start, and it looked like maybe he was having a true breakout, and then, of course, he got hurt and needed Tommy John surgery. So I'm currently, you know, I can't imagine dropping Grandal. Because I worry about the layoff and what that means for Wieters, and I can't carry both, so I'm going to keep Grandal over him. But that could be a mistake. I mean, what kind of year do you expect from Grandal if he's healthy? From Wieters.
Oh. like I said, I think top 10 catcher, but maybe, you know, not, like you were saying before, he's sort of perennially top 7. I could see him having a slow start and also more limited playing time early on. So... batting average in the maybe 260, 270 range with, let's see, we got 2/3 of the season left, so maybe about a dozen home runs.
I think it is
probably take Grandal over him.
I'm sorry, Chris, I keep interrupting you today. I was going to say, I do think it's relevant to point out how well Caleb Joseph has played.
I don't think that's the thing that's going to depress Wieters' value.
What were you saying, Towers?
I think I'd rather have Grandal.
Well, look, people need catchers, so Wieters, hopefully you've been stashing him in two catcher leagues. You might get him back soon. And Brandon Morrow made a rehab start. Let's not forget he was 2-0 with a 2.73 ERA, and he's 49% owned. That was before he went on the DL, obviously. So Morrow, maybe a couple weeks away from returning. Thoughts on him?
Meh.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, just... I don't know. He's somebody I don't own him, so this is all hypothetical, but I don't know that I would have stashed him for this long, and I don't know that I'm running out to pick him up either.
in the bullpen. A lot of bullpen news today. Lloyd McClendon, he wants to lose. He is sticking with Fernando Rodney as the Seattle closer. Now, he didn't say he wanted to lose. I'm paraphrasing.
You're reading between the lines.
Yeah, well, he wants to limit Carson Smith's innings, and he said that Smith doesn't have his, quote, man muscles, end quote, and that his velocity decreases if he pitches back-to-back games.
Yeah, Lloyd was saying some kind of silly stuff about the closer situation. I wrote about that in my Week 9 closer stock watch. Quote, I'll say this, people get caught up in hits and ERA and stuff. I don't give a damn about his ERA as long as he closes them out. That's all I care about.
But he's not closing them out, really, and you should.
But he has 234 career saves. He's a proven closer.
does this quote from him back you off of Carson Smith, who, by the way, I went and looked at the game logs. He's pitched just fine in second games of back-to-backs.
I'm not sure Lloyd McClendon's opinion here is backed up by things like stats or reality. I think it's just Fernando Rodney's his closer, and Fernando Rodney's his closer.
But I got to think, I mean, obviously, look, there's pressure in Seattle to win, as we saw it with the trade. So that might not be his world, but I think eventually that reality is going to be forced upon him, and with possibly his job at stake if things continue to go down this road.
I would still be very interested in Carson Smith. I think he looks like a very good reliever, but McClendon's stubbornness is very frustrating.
This is completely unrelated, except that he used to be a Mariner, and his name begins with a C, and he's pitching really well, and he's a relief pitcher. But other than all those things, it's unrelated. How is Carter Capps, how is what he's doing legal? Do you guys know the explanation?
It's not. He got in trouble for it, and they supposedly sent him down to the minors to fix it. And it's still, it's really weird that it doesn't get called more often.
and I don't understand why it doesn't.
That weird, like, hop, it's a quick pitch.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't look legal.
To the Arizona bullpen, Brad Ziegler gave up a home run yesterday, got his fifth save. Addison Reed, 5 straight scoreless appearances, 9 out of 10 scoreless with only 5 hits allowed. Best bet on who's closing in Arizona in a month.
Addison Reed.
Unfortunately, I agree with Chris.
Managers don't like having weird sidearm pitchers in closers' roles, and Addison Reed's another proven closer, even if he's proven to be mediocre.
He could close for Lloyd McClendon any day.
I just want them to settle on Addison Reed because I'm so tired of writing about it. I've had to write about their closer situation 5 straight weeks in my closers column.
Have you been writing about the Rays' closer situation?
I have not yet.
Okay, let's talk about that. Brad Boxberger had a disappointing outing. They tried to get him a 4-out save. He gave up 2 hits, 2 walks, and a run. He's been a little erratic lately. Meanwhile, Jake McGee, 35% owned, in McGee's last 3 appearances, 2 2/3, no hits, no runs, no walks, 4 strikeouts. And he was totally awesome last year.
Yeah, no, I mean, McGee would be a perfectly fine closer if he's given the opportunity, and I am afraid, as a Boxberger owner, that could happen, because I think Boxberger's just going through one of those stretches that virtually every closer, you know, other than Andrew Miller, goes through. And the Rays have a great alternative to go to. But, you know, that said, I'm not, probably should at least look to maybe handcuff McGee. But other than that, I don't really see any moves to make here.
Now we got 3 elite closers. Greg Holland, he got the save last night. He struck out Lonnie Chisenhall with a 95-mile-per-hour fastball to end the game. Craig Kimbrell, he's still giving up a lot of hits. Last 7 appearances, 6 hits and 6 1/3, which is really a lot for him, but only 1 earned run. But 3 walks, 10 strikeouts, and just so few save opportunities for Kimbrell. Not that he has any control of that, but he still just is not Craig Kimbrell. And then Kenley Jansen, this is the most concerning in my opinion. Or it could be completely nothing. But he pitched on Wednesday and was unavailable yesterday and had nothing to do with workload, and Don Mattingly would not say why. He just said he was unavailable. And of course they blew it in the 9th at Colorado. Any thoughts on Holland, who Chris, you brought up yesterday, Kimbrell or Jansen?
I wrote a lot of words about Greg Holland, so if you're interested in that, fantasynews.cbssports.com, shameless plug. His velocity is down almost 2 miles per hour. since last season. I wonder if that's a result of the pectoral strain that he suffered early in the season and just not being 100% healthy. But he clearly hasn't been himself this season. And I'm definitely a little concerned about that, if only because there's no reasonable explanation for it.
But he hasn't been bad.
The ERA is nice. The ERA, I still think, is under 2.5, which for him is kind of bad. It's right. Kind of twice what he's done in the last few years, but it's not bad. But strikeout to walk ratio way down. Just hasn't been nearly the dominant pitcher that we've seen, and his velocity has been down consistently throughout the season. The problem is that there's no reasonable explanation for it right now.
Right. All right, well, it was a good sign the velocity got up a little bit last night. But that had happened, I think, 3 outings ago, and then it went down again the next 2 outings for
Holland. His strikeout percentage has fallen from 40.4% in 2013 to 20.8%.
Mm.
It's
that's a lot.
Fallen in half, and his walk rate is double. So it's still only 12 1/3 innings, so it's still hard to say to take too much out of it, but it's definitely not nothing.
He's only made 3 appearances, Holland, since coming off the DL, and they've been very sporadic. The 25th of May, the 29th of May, and the 3rd of June. Maybe he just
that was just he had the neck stiffness. He didn't go on the DL for that, right?
Yeah, he was on the DL.
He was on the DL for the pec strain.
Oh. Well, you know
just,
what?
He had like a week off.
Well, then you're right. Okay, yeah.
So I think he's made 8 appearances since coming off the DL.
Okay, I'm sorry. But he had a big gap from May 14th to May 25th. He just hasn't pitched very much lately. He hasn't pitched regularly.
That's the thing is that he's so good historically. He's arguably been the best reliever in baseball over the last 5 years. That it's 12 innings. It's hard to, like, that's all we have to go on this season. So you have to look at what it says, but it's also like, it might just be a bad 12 inning stretch, which for him is still pretty good.
So do you guys consider Kimbrel and Holland still to be elite closers? Maybe you want to make a trade for one of them.
Yeah, no, I do. I do. I'm very encouraged by Holland's velocity rebounding because that was worrying me a little bit, but very reassuring.
I think with Jansen, we just got to wait and see what happens there. So we got a lot to talk about from yesterday's games and some FanDuel advice for you later. Emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. I'll start with one Wednesday standout. It's got to be Masahiro Tanaka. I said don't start him because he's going to be on a pitch limit. Well, he didn't even throw 80 pitches in 7 innings. 3 hits, 1 run, no walks, 9 strikeouts. And you want to talk about velocity. He had his best velocity of the year, I think. He's throwing 95 at one point. This was an outstanding start from Tanaka, who made 2 very good ones before going on the DL.
I think I saw on Twitter that his final pitch of the outing was his hardest pitch of the season.
I think it was 95 miles per hour to Kyle Seager or something like that.
There is there is no question how good he is. He could be the best pitcher in baseball. He has that kind of ability. And on a per pitch and per inning basis, that might be the guy he is. But you just can't rely on him. Like I like having him on my team. Before the season, I talked about my strategy of having the Masahiro Tanaka Jose Fernandez combination and just hoping you get one first round pick value season out of the two of them. And look, if he can get through July, it's a win for you.
But you're not. Counting on it.
What's that?
You're not necessarily counting on it.
There's no way you can.
Yeah, that's true. It's a shame. Any other standouts for you guys?
I know we've already talked about McCullers, but just to kind of put an exclamation point on it, I'd say that I was a little bit concerned about the control and about the dominance, level of dominance for McCullers in his first 3 starts. 15 swings and misses against the Orioles, 73 strikes out of 107 pitches. So kind of tough to beat that. But I'm going to go back to, one of my favorites, Trevor May.
Yeah.
With, I think, I don't know in terms of game scores, but certainly a contender for best game of his career. A 7-run outing, which I think ties a career high for him.
7-inning outing.
7 innings. I'm not sure why I just said strikeouts.
No, you said 7 runs.
7 runs. That would be the worst outing, maybe, of his career.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Seven innings, no runs, no walks, and over his last four starts, just one walk. The control, which was already pretty good early in the season, just keeps improving. And better luck of late, because he's really, you know, early on he had the very ugly ERA, but he just wasn't stranding guys. So it sort of looked like he had a little bit of Ricky Nolasco disease there, where the peripherals were looking pretty strong, but he just wasn't pitching up to them. And last four starts, a 3.38 ERA with a lower BABIP and a better strand rate.
I'm going to talk about someone who fell to 3-6 on the season, allowed four runs in yesterday's start. Corey Kluber struck out 28.1% of the Kansas City Royals he faced. This is the team that strikes out not just less than everybody in baseball, but by a wide margin. And he struck out nine of them in eight innings. So Corey Kluber, maybe the best pitcher besides Felix Hernandez and Clayton Kershaw in baseball. There was some concern about him early. This dude is really, really good.
Wait, what about Tanaka?
I thought he's up there. He's in that discussion.
Nobody is in the discussion. That is a Clayton Kershaw discussion.
I like to hand out superlatives to a lot of people. I'm like a high school yearbook.
Clayton Kershaw is just so much better than everyone else. I'm sorry to say it.
He's good.
Felix is right there.
I don't believe that now.
I do. And Al, I believe at the end of the year you'll come around. Why don't you believe that now?
Because I just think that the gap is closed when you see the domination that we've seen from Kluber, from Sale, last start notwithstanding Felix. I think David Price at any point could join that group.
No,
there's a lot of good pitchers.
And then, yeah, you mentioned this, you know, Tanaka guy who's pretty good. Jose Fernandez when he comes back.
Well, Matt Harvey might get my vote for second best.
I wanted to point out, I wrote a blog post yesterday about Noah Syndergaard and Andrew Kashner's ridiculous 5-run, 10-strikeout outings.
Yeah.
That's a good sign. Because the ability to strike out 10 batters in less than 5 innings is a very strong indicator that you're a really good pitcher. Because the guys that have done that in the past, it's happened 16 times. They're guys like peak Jake Peavy, Curt Schilling, Nolan Ryan did it twice. It's a really good sign that you're able to, like, I'm not worried about those two guys after those outings. I somehow took a positive out of those two.
Makes sense.
Nine plus ERA starts that they had.
Any concerns at all about John Lester and his bad start?
I don't. I don't really have an explanation for it, but he had really, once he seemed to get past the dead arm thing, was just vintage Lester.
Look, sometimes you run into the buzzsaw that is the Jeff Baker-led Marlins.
Well, actually, I didn't start him in FanDuel because I saw the Marlins actually did pretty well against lefties. But then I started thinking to myself, who are the good lefties in the National League? Kershaw, Lester.
Bumgarner.
I don't know.
Gio?
Oh, Cole Hamels. No, Gio, he hasn't been good this year. I guess there are some, but couldn't really say.
That's not a bad collection there.
The Marlins have some guys that can hit lefties. That's my takeaway there.
And they hit Cole Hamels pretty well, if I remember correctly, Al, right? Sunday afternoon game or something like that, Saturday afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Roughed him up a bit. And Freddie Freeman hit 2 home runs at Arizona, and now he's got 10. We talked about him, I think, on Tuesday. Anything else to say about him?
He's good.
Yeah.
Cool. Injuries, news, and notes. The Red Sox acquired Alejandro Deaza from Baltimore for minor league pitcher Joe Gunkel.
Can I pass along Scott White's instant reaction to that?
To what? Yeah.
Why are they doing that?
Yeah, that was kind of my reaction. Why are they doing that?
I feel like the Red Sox need some outfielders.
Yeah.
You know? They don't have enough outfielders.
Can never have enough.
By the way, they did acquire Eduardo Rodriguez from Baltimore last year, so maybe they know something. Maybe they're just going to fleece Baltimore again. It wasn't a fleece. They gave up Andrew Miller in that trade.
Hashtag Gunkel.
Gunkel and some cash. Hunter Pence sat with a bruised wrist. Tyler Cravey, we hardly knew ye. You've been demoted. Milwaukee sent him down. Jake Peavy is going to make a rehab start Saturday. Ricky Nolasco could end up on the DL. Jung Ho Gong sat for the second straight day as the Pirates are trying to monitor his innings, his workload. Jordy Mercer's now homered in two straight games.
Of course he has.
Yeah, he's got two on the year and a .210 batting average. J.J. Hardy could play today. Jose Abreu homered despite his finger injury, and Michael Kadire was out with a sore back. A lot of fringy starting pitchers yesterday. Interesting ones. So I'll probably divide this list into two. Hector Santiago, bad start against the Rays. Nick Martinez, terrible start against the White Sox. Okay, I don't quite know how to interpret that sound that, effect.
It's like the farmer says.
Yeah, yeah.
That is the physical, that is the auditory personification of regression.
All in one start. Hector Santiago, Nick Martinez, Mike Bolsinger, not a good start, but at Colorado. Ruby De La Rosa, Miguel Gonzalez, Jimmy Nelson. Hector Santiago, Nick Martinez, Mike Bolsinger, Ruby De La Rosa, Miguel Gonzalez, Jimmy Nelson. What are your thoughts on that group of six?
There's no one there that I really trust all that much. And oddly enough, the one I might trust the most often is actually Nick Martinez. And yeah, he was due for some regression. He's far from a must-start guy, but I think he does have his appeal. But it's funny, because right before the start, I said to Heath, how is he not worse at home? So maybe it is a good idea to avoid him in most home starts.
I like Santiago and De La Rosa to an extent, but neither one of them I'm definitely starting every week for sure.
And the Rays, by the way, have been very good against lefties, so not necessarily representative for Santiago.
Yeah, I actually had a difficult decision to make. Santiago, I saw Lance McCullers was on waivers in one league, and Santiago was the only guy I could drop. And at that point, I don't think he had thrown two good innings against the Rays and had been pitching very well. I did make the call, and I dropped Santiago for McCullers, and I woke up, saw the final line, and it was easier to do. Yeah, so I was going to ask, you guys would rather have McCullers and Eduardo Rodriguez over all of the guys I just mentioned?
Yeah. And Jimmy Nelson's a major bummer.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he'd be really good this year. He's not.
Is he someone you still want to hang on to and stash, Jimmy Nelson?
Yeah, not necessarily. If it's for one of the two guys you mentioned, and he's quite likely my best alternative drop, see you later.
What if you're dropping Jimmy Nelson for, let's see, where just to look him up in the rankings, for an Ian Kennedy?
Yeah, I would do that too.
Jimmy Nelson or, oh, good gravy, Al. You have Yordano Ventura behind Jimmy Nelson in your rankings.
Well, Nelson's getting dropped.
You have Ventura 58th?
Yeah.
He's not.
Yeah, well, what's so great about Ventura?
Why do we have to have that conversation over and over?
What's so bad about Ventura?
He's not that good.
Yeah.
He's not that bad.
He's not that bad. Like,
58th isn't that bad.
There's 30 teams and 5 rotation spots.
There are about 10 pitchers.
He is not a top 40 pitcher, Ventura.
I would rather have him over Chris Heston. I would rather have him over Phil Hughes, Ruby De La Rosa, Ian Kennedy, Jared Weaver, Anibal Sanchez.
Call me when he actually starts striking guys out.
Okay, I need to look up his
numbers. And I will agree with some of those, and Heston and Nelson will certainly get dropped in the next rankings review.
Why are strikeouts the be-all, end-all with you freaks, you nerds? He's got 49 strikeouts this year.
If that were true, I wouldn't have just said nice things about Nick Martinez.
That is true. He's got 49 strikeouts and 61 and a third. You can get by with that. Okay, 4.26 ERA. I think that'll come down. He had struggled earlier. Two of his last three starts, well, two of his last four have been great. Two of his last four have been pretty bad. So he's inconsistent. I see that. But the way Ventura ended the year last year and his stuff, he's so young. Don't give up on him. And don't give up on his strikeout potential.
Nobody's giving up on him.
That was a great stunned expression from
nobody's
from Chris.
Giving up on him. He is absolutely young. He is one day past his 24th birthday. He is very young. But we're talking about what he is right now. And what he is right now is a guy who throws really hard and doesn't get strikeouts. And there's a very delicate line that you have to walk when you throw that hard, because guys who throw hard tend to be a little more homer prone. And if you're not keeping guys off base, which he doesn't do a fantastic job of, I think there's some concern that he, I think he's also one of the leaders in batted ball velocity allowed, which again, guy doesn't strike people out, throws hard, the bat's gonna come off, the ball's gonna come off the bat harder.
You say he doesn't strike people out. It's not like he's a terrible strikeout pitcher.
No, he's a league average guy in his career.
With potential for more.
And sure. Potential is great.
And you could say the same thing about Foltynewicz and De La Rosa and, you know, a number of guys.
Taiwan Walker.
Great. All right,
well, let's talk about Foltynewicz. Taiwan Walker. Next group of fringy starting pitchers, Taiwan Walker. Who it's pitching pretty well over his last two starts anyway. And Walker has a 2.22 ERA in four home starts, a 9.79 ERA in six road starts. Foltynewicz got beat up yesterday. Mark Burley, two complete games in a row. This was a complete game shutout at Washington. Chad Bettis, 2.70 ERA pitching for Colorado. Tim Hudson and Trevor May. Walker, Foltynewicz, Burley, Bettis, May. Anybody you really like there?
Well, I really like Foltynewicz, and I even pursued him as a pickup this week with the one start because the two start options were so bad, and obviously got punished for doing that.
yeah, he's in my terrible pitching rotation right now.
It's not going to be a smart move to, you know, rely on him in this particular week. I think it was, you know, maybe strategically it was a good move because again the alternatives weren't great. But, I like his chances rest of season to be really good.
Would you rather have Foltynewicz or Taiwan Walker?
Folty.
I can't figure out what I think about Taiwan Walker. It just...
Dude, he looked nasty yesterday. Gave up two home runs.
He does that for stretches.
Yeah.
But he just... I don't know. He doesn't... For all his stuff, he doesn't get a lot of swinging strikes. And he doesn't have great command. I guess I could take full... Push.
Okay. Chad Bettis or Trevor May?
Trevor May.
Sure.
Taiwan Walker or Carlos Rodon?
Well, that's a tough one.
I think they are... I feel like they're kind of the right-handed and left-handed versions of themselves. They're... Rodon, I can't trust until he... develops confidence in that changeup, because he just right now right-handed pit batters just aren't having any issues with him.
Yeah,
it's not even that he's not throwing strikes; his walk rate's high because he's throwing the ball in the zone. It's just right-handed batters are not swinging at anything outside of the zone against him. He just can't. They're sitting on the fastball in the zone.
Dropometer 0 to 10 on the dropometer, dropometer, 10 is a drop. Zero is no way. Anibal Sanchez.
One. I don't think I can do it.
I will go 3 because I could do it in a 10-team mixed league.
Phil Hughes.
I'll go 6 there.
I was going to go 8.
I'll go 30.
He didn't throw the chew ball once yesterday.
Now, don't be biased because you had a dream about him. You have to give some real fantasy analysis here, okay?
Still a 6.
I want to say, last I checked, he was throwing something like 57% of his pitches in the strike zone. I compared Jason Hamill to him the other day because of his elite strikeout-to-walk ratio. That wasn't fair. Jason Hamill's a lot better.
Well, strikeout-to-walk ratio... Well, he only 7 walks for Hughes, but 45 strikeouts in 69 innings.
And, yeah, he's throwing 60% of his pitches in the zone right now.
If you believe in Phil Hughes,
he doesn't have the stuff to do that.
Yeah, if he wants to grow up to be Bartolo Colon, that's great. But
yeah, he does not have the stuff to get away with that.
Yeah.
If you believe in Phil Hughes, I'm not surprised he had a bad game yesterday because it just the Red Sox, a lot of those hitters there, they own him. I mean, the BVP was scary, and that's not a surprise because obviously he pitched against them a lot when he wasn't that good. But I just kind of felt like that wasn't going to be a good start for Hughes. And it wasn't. 11 hits and 4 1/3 and 5 runs. Deep leagues, real quick. Any interest in Joey Butler or Ruben Tejada?
Butler, sure. I think he's must-owned in AL only, making him under-owned at 3%. And maybe even a little bit beyond that. Tejada, I can't say I have any interest there.
You gotta like Joey Butler's 30-37 batting average with 2 walks and 28 strikeouts. So,
like that.
Emails. Then we'll do DFS. Emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Paul in New York. I drafted Alcides Escobar hoping for 30 steals, good average, and top of a good order. Should I drop Alcides Escobar for Gene Segura or Jose Iglesias? It's a 12-team roto league.
I just feel like it's like a three-sided coin flip. Those guys are all pretty equal in value. I suppose I like Segura a little better.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
From Jim in the Woods. All right, Jim, here we go. Grade the trade. 16 teams, head-to-head categories, with OBP instead of average. Grade the trade. Give up Carrasco, Jesse Chavez, and Albert Pujols for Clayton Kershaw and Matt Kemp.
I'm giving that a D+.
Really? You don't like that trade?
No. Huh. At this point, I would actually much, much rather have Pujols than Kemp. I understand Carrasco to Kershaw is an upgrade, but Carrasco, I think, is going to be very good, and you don't need to, sacrifice the offense in order to get Kershaw. I just have no faith that Matt Kemp's going to do anything.
I'll give it a C+. I think I like the idea of obtaining higher end talent in a deeper league like that.
I kind of like the idea of obtaining more talent in a deeper league.
I was going to say,
like,
I would give
players.
It a better grade in a 10-team league.
Yeah, it's like, so Jesse Chavez, for example, in a 10-team league, if you make this trade, Jesse Chavez, you might drop him. It's no big deal. But in a 16-team league, there's nobody nearly as good as Jesse Chavez on waivers most of the time.
Sure, but the difference between the number one pitcher on the best number one pitcher and the 16th best number one pitcher is so vast. And so much vaster than the difference between the 10th and the number 1 and the number 10, I think.
I think in deeper leagues like our, even our 12-team roto leagues with 30-man rosters, corner infield, middle infield, five outfield, like, that's why I never spend big on starting pitcher. I never spend big on Mike Trout or someone like that. Like, I like to spread out my money because I don't think you need the elite guys. I think you need balance. I mean, you need some great players, but I like to have balanced rosters in deep leagues.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess I unintentionally got the last word there. This is from Bob Cobb in Shark's Tooth Capital of the World, Florida. I have no idea what that is.
Me neither. It sounds like it's a Seinfeld reference, so.
Huh. I might get a calzone today, by the way. Are there certain parameters and or indicators of guys that have a hot June and July? In what cities does the hotter, warmer weather make a difference to offensive production?
I'm not sure if there's really anything to this on any kind of systemic level. I'm sure for particular guys, it makes a difference. I would think the Rust Belt cities, if those players would probably be more impacted, but other than just going and looking up somebody's career monthly splits, somebody like Adam LaRoche, actually, I expect that he'll produce better in the summer, not necessarily because of the weather, but just that's kind of been his history.
I think there's a balancing act there because you would expect players to hit better as the weather warms up, but on the other side of the coin, pitchers tend to see their velocity increase as the season goes on. When they're getting, typically velocity is a little lower in April. So I think those things would balance out a little bit.
By the way, you have any idea how cold it is in New York?
No, I don't.
June. It is June 4th. I had to wear my winter coat yesterday, partially because I'm a total wimp, but also because it was in the 50s, like the low 50s in the morning when I woke up, which it was
today as
well.
Sure you're not like in Detroit or something?
It's ridiculous. It's June.
It's been gross here.
Gross what, like 90?
Hot and rainy.
Just whatever. Anything's better than cold to me.
Yeah.
Of course, most people aren't cold in 55 degrees. JD from Michigan says, hello, Ed, and Eddie. And I know Chris loved that show.
What's that supposed to mean?
That almost
sounds offensive.
You feel like you seem like a Cartoon Network kind of guy to me.
Yeah, that's fair. You're not wrong.
I have Reyes, Crawford, and Simeon. I feel like I should move one of them while their stock is still high. Who would be the easiest/best to offer? Reyes, Brandon Crawford, Mike Marcus Semien.
I'd say Crawford because I have the least faith that he'll keep doing what he's doing.
Exactly.
I did want to talk more about Semien. Maybe we'll do that tomorrow. He's been cold, and now he has 19 errors. And he moved down in the order, which is just, wow, awful. I mean, the most important thing in fantasy. Here's one. It says, from, please do not use my real name. I have an owner who is hoarding Dellin Betances. I've offered Jorge Soler and Carlos Santana independently and was rejected. So not both at the same time. I have Miller, and I want Betances to strengthen my whip and ERA. Should I offer George Springer or Jock Peterson for Betances, or do you think it's too much and the owner is just stingy?
Oh, I think that's way too much.
Yeah. I wouldn't give up any of those guys. Maybe Soler for Betances.
Yeah.
If you guys want to talk about DFS, I'm actually interested. We'll just talk about the night slate. There are, I think, 7 games tonight. I want to see where Betances ranks in Roto among pitchers.
The pitching slate tonight, not so great. You've got Harvey and Arrieta as the top two guys. After that, it's really hard to find someone, and even, I guess Arrieta against Washington is a pretty good matchup, but, you know, Waka against Los Angeles, Gio against the Cubs could be a decent one, but Gio hasn't been great. And Trevor Bauer typically could be a decent flyer option, but he's going against Kansas City, who never strikes out.
They don't, but they have the last two games. Like, Carrasco destroyed them. Kluber did.
Those are two really real. I don't know if Trevor Bauer's quite on their level.
He's had
a little bit of strikeout inconsistency. I wouldn't expect a lot tonight.
I think when you look at Arrieta's had a couple of bad ones, a couple of like not great ones in a row. Basically, not worth the price, and just the BVP's not great for him against Washington. There are some guys who hit him pretty well in limited at bats. I just think it's so obvious to go with Matt Harvey today.
It is. He's the only guy I would consider in a cash tournament. And the only guy I'm really interested in a cash game. And in a tournament, I'd go Chris Young. And yeah, I know I'm unreasonably attached to using him in tournaments, but, you know, I like him at home.
Yeah, pitching's been a real disaster for me the last couple of days. I had Noah Syndergaard on Tuesday and John Lester last night in my main lineups. I keep trying to outsmart myself, I guess, and going with the cheaper pitchers, and it hasn't worked out. It's really hard to find any cheap pitchers to take that flyer on today. Maybe Desclafani against Philadelphia.
I was thinking more maybe Harang.
Yeah, maybe Carlos Rodon against the Rangers, since he was a little better in his last start, but it's an ugly pitching slate tonight for sure.
I think
and
it's got to be hard.
You mentioned Waka, so even though the Dodgers aren't in Colorado anymore, I think you keep riding the Dodger lefties because I think they could punish Waka.
It's
what?
Possible,
but,
yeah.
But you love Michael Waka.
In 95% of circumstances, I love Michael Waka, but I worry a lot about this matchup.
Interesting.
That was before, that's when he's not pitching against Jock the God.
Right. and I also wouldn't mind stacking against Ronis Elias, and it's nothing personal against him. I actually think he's pretty good and a little bit underrated. But actually, as I mentioned earlier in the show, the Rays have been very good against lefties. So
Michael Waka has been better against left-handed batters in his career. Significantly so.
Really?
653 OPS against righties, 575 against lefties. So that might be a potential fade option, is fading the Los Angeles Dodgers right-handed batters.
Yeah, that's too much risk for me. And Adam, I know you brought up the strikeouts with Waka, and I would be lying if I said I'm not a little bit concerned about that. I'm more concerned about the fact that he's really allowing a lot of fly balls lately. So
strikeouts are all us nerds care about, though.
Oh, that's right.
That's true. Never mind. Well, in FanDuel, they really should be pretty much all you care about. I don't think there's an obvious stack today, because some of the bad pitchers that you want to stack against have pitched well lately, but I do think Jeremy Hellickson facing the Mets, he's really bad at home, and he's had 3 quality starts in a row. 2 of them have been on the road, and I think in that home start, he gave up a couple of homers, even though it was a quality start. So I do have Lucas Duda, who's 3,900, fairly expensive.
that's the problem. There's not a whole lot of good Mets hitters.
Yeah, and like Rizzo is a guy I'm avoiding. He's 0 for 11 with 4 strikeouts against Gio Gonzalez. Goldschmidt's just a little bit too expensive, and he's facing Matt Harvey. So I'm going Duda. If you want to go a little cheaper, Adam, if you want to take a flyer on Adam LaRoche, he's 2,800, and he's 11 for 30 with 2 home runs against Giovanni Gallardo, and 829 OPS against righties this year for LaRoche, and he's been hitting a little bit better lately. But I don't really see an obvious stack. I mean, you can't look at Carlos Frias' ERA. Almost all of it came in one horrible game. Chris Young is better than we thought. Aaron Harang, there's no more stacking against him. The Phillies aren't good enough to stack against DeSclafani.
Well, again, I'll come back to the Rays because maybe not a full four-player stack, but I would be very interested in starting Sousa, Forsyth, and Longoria tonight.
Okay, okay, those are good. A couple more BVPs. It's really tough day today. Brandon Moss, 3,700, kind of expensive, but 4 for 14 with 3 home runs against Chris Young. Seth Smith is 2,500 bucks. He's 4 for 11 with a home run and 2 doubles against Erasmo Ramirez. And that's it. That's all I got. So, I won't even tell you my lineup because it's going to change so much. But the guys that are going to stay are Matt Harvey and Lucas Duda. And maybe, I think Brandon Moss will stay in there. Maybe Yadier Molina just because he's so cheap and he has a pulse. And catcher's kind of tough today. Anything else, dudes?
Yeah, I think that's a lot for a pretty crummy day.
Yeah, 6 p.m. Eastern, more help from Heath. And who's on tonight?
It is Matt Avia again. And then I will be on tomorrow night.
Okay, so stay tuned. 6 p.m. Eastern, CBSSports.com. Al, Chris, nerds, thank you. See you later, guys.
Nerds out.
See ya.
I'm Adam Azer, and as Chris said, nerds out.